Just Pod, a podcast by the Criminal Justice Section of the ABA, the unified voice of criminal justice. Hello, and welcome to this episode of the Just Pod. I'm your host, Emily Johnson, and today we have Maryam Aranjani, assistant professor at the University of New Mexico School of Law, also the reporter for the Women in Criminal Justice Task Force. So Maryam, thank you for joining us today. Let's just start at the beginning. Can you tell us why the Women in Criminal Justice Task Force was created?
Absolutely, and thank you, Emily, for inviting me to be part of your first podcast. It's very exciting for me to be able to talk about this task force. I feel really passionately about it, and I'm hoping to inspire others to also care about our work. So in terms of how or why the task force was created, I think it was created in the current climate that we find ourselves in our country, but also in our profession, which is one where we are really seeking to hold on to our values in terms of equality, not just of opportunity, but of outcomes. And in particular in the legal profession, we have always had challenges with women having equal opportunity and outcomes. And so this section in particular of criminal justice, I think, has noticed this unfortunate reality, which is that women do not occupy a sort of an equal space as men do. And so the task force was created in reaction to that reality.
Yeah, I think that we've all been seeing that the current climate is manifesting itself in a lot of different fields, and so it's great to see action being taken with this task force being created. So can you tell us what the task force hopes to accomplish? And then also, I did mention that you are the reporter for the Women in Criminal Justice Task Force. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us more about what that role entails and what some of your background has been that has helped prepare you to take on this role?
Absolutely. So I think that the creation of the task force represents a serious commitment on the part of the American Bar Association to address this issue. And so I'd like to make sure we recognize the commitment, the resources that the ABA has allocated to our task force, because it's really important to actually sort of embrace that as we move forward in this three-year study. And so let me say a little bit more about the three-year study. We started in November of 2018, and so we're anticipating a full year of inquiry through primarily listening sessions, so organized listening sessions that are strategically chosen around the country to try to reach as many women as possible. And others, we in these initial stages are really looking to hear from women who are in the front lines of practicing criminal law or who have left the practice of criminal law for very specific reasons that align with the task force. But I'm sort of getting ahead of myself. Let me just say a little bit about the specific role of the task force. So first, we're doing these listening sessions and gathering as much information as we possibly can about two things. One, what are the barriers that women are facing and how are they manifesting? And two is, what are the solutions? What are some of the things that already work well, and what are the things we know we need to implement in order for there to be greater equity? So the report will be written in the ensuing year based on all the results we get from the listening sessions and other conversations that we're able to have around mm-hmm. the country. In terms of my particular role, so as you mentioned, I'm an assistant professor at the University of New Mexico School of Law. I teach criminal law, criminal procedure, and other criminal-related courses, as well as other courses. But my real personal interest in this topic is both personal and professional. Criminal law was an area I considered when I was in law school, and actually through my participation in this task force, I've realized that I received subtle messaging about whether I would have the stomach to be a criminal lawyer. And so although I was really interested in the issues, I ended up doing crim law adjacent work, so advocating for juveniles primarily in the District of Columbia when I started out, and developing curriculum. I co-authored a textbook called Youth Justice in America about the criminal constitutional rights of young people, and have done other advocacy work, but never actually have been in the courtroom representing the state or a client in a criminal matter. And so that's sort of my personal interest. And then as far as the professional interest, in our state, we have one law school, and that is our law school. And I teach, as I mentioned, many criminal law courses. I'm one of two or three faculty members that really focus on the area. And so I feel very much like what I do in the classroom and what I do to mentor my own students is going to have a direct and immediate impact on the profession in our state. And so I have really a strong interest / obligation, I feel like, to understand these issues and figure out how we can better address them, you know, at the front end of the pipeline, but then also through the career, you know, trajectory.
Now that's very interesting insight and so true. As we talk about the pipeline for the field of criminal justice, you're right, it starts there.
Yeah.
Just so interesting, and thank you for sharing your personal experience.
Sure.
It was interesting to hear you say that you chose to pursue criminal adjacent work as opposed to going to the courtroom yourself to pursue it, and some of the reasons that led to that.
Yeah.
Because those are exactly some of the issues
that
this task force is going to address. Are there other anecdotes that have come up that these listening sessions that you mentioned, we know they're going to happen across the country, right? So can you tell us more about these sessions, where they will be held, and as I was starting to say, any sort of anecdotes or preliminary insights that sort of stand out as things that the task force is interested in exploring more? We know it's too soon for any findings, of course, but yeah, tell us more about these listening sessions that are going to be happening across the country.
Sure. So the task force has committed to having 6 formal listening sessions and probably countless other informal listening sessions. And I'll say more about the informal in just a minute. So in terms of the formal listening sessions, we have one right now going on at the ABA's mid-year conference here in Las Vegas. And we're looking forward to speaking with women about their experiences at that task force listening session. We also have one coming up in early March in Albuquerque and in New Mexico. We haven't quite finalized the location yet, but somewhere in New Mexico. In April, we will be in Nashville. And in June, we'll be in Spokane, Washington. In August, we'll be in San Francisco for the ABA's annual conference. And as you can see reflected in the locations that we've chosen, they, again, have been very purposely chosen to try to attract as diverse a population as possible of women criminal lawyers. We are really looking to expand our reach as far as we can into rural areas, into Native American communities, into, you know, African American, Latino communities. Again, we really want to be as broad and as inclusive as possible, and so we're trying to have those listening sessions, you know, as many as possible, but those particular 4 coming up. Now, in terms of the informal ones, we really invite anyone who's listening to this podcast to let us know if there's somewhere you think we need to be to hear your voice. We have a running list of different conferences and meetings where both our task force members will attend, but also where we'd like to send somebody to go attend, myself or someone else from the task force. And so our goal really is for to reach, again, as many people as possible, and so we're going to try to do that.
Yes, thank you.
Sure.
Okay, so you were touching on the diversity. So can you tell us more about the creation of the task force, the actual members of the task force, and how the members were selected to participate?
Absolutely. And I just have to say, you know, I've been involved in similar work before, not with the ABA, but other organizations. And so the first thing I did when I was asked to consider being the when I actually was applying to be the reporter, was that I looked at who was on this task force, because to me, it was really important to be part of something organic, genuine, and meaningful. And I have to say that these women on this task force are absolutely superstars in so many different ways, and they represent so many different communities. We have representation from academia, we have representation from the public defense world, we have a Sixth Circuit justice on our panel, we have the task force, that is. We've got local government leaders, military lawyers represented, so it's just an incredibly diverse group. We have a woman who has her own practice representing transgender clients. She herself is an immigrant from the Philippines and is transgender herself. So I think you can tell that there really was a purposeful outreach effort to make sure that members of the task force didn't just talk about diversity, but have experienced it themselves firsthand.
Mm-hmm. So who do you hope to engage in this work? It sounds like inclusivity is key to your outreach.
Inclusivity is incredibly key, and I think, I'll just step back a second. I hope you'll forgive me for being an academic, but just to frame the issue a little bit, when I think about what sets our legal system apart from other countries, we really have this longstanding tradition of respect for the rule of law, and the very structure of the criminal justice system feeds into both public and actual public perception and actual outcomes in terms of the rule of law. And so when you look at what makes people depend on a system and be able to believe in a system and turn to the system for help when they need it, it requires representation. And so, there are lots of studies to show this in lots of different fields, not just in the law, but, I was trying to actually explain this task force to my niece the other day, who's from Peru, and she is just visiting us for a little bit. So I was trying to explain it to her, and I said, if a person is a victim of domestic violence and she identifies as a woman, if she has a perception that the police, the prosecutor, the defense lawyer, and other decision makers in the process are all men, what's the likelihood that she's going to report and try to seek help for her situation, right?
Right, not very likely.
Not very likely. And so,
certainly a level of intimidation,
yes,
by all means.
Yes. And so that's, I think, both in terms of why we need more women, but also, it reminds me of, you had asked earlier about some specific anecdotes, and I spoke with an AUSA who's very interested in our work, who mentioned that he even has noticed that in interviewing crime victims, whether they're adults or children, that women have played a critical role in his office in making sure to get the full story, and just developing that comfort level is so critical to having good witnesses and being able to prosecute someone for horrific crime. And so we want to make sure that, we can represent all the different voices. In that particular instance, he was talking specifically about having a Native woman working on Indian country crimes is critical to being able to prosecute those crimes. So it's just one example.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. So are there any other anecdotes that we've heard in the listening session so far? There was one hosted in D.C. We'll have our second one today.
Yes.
But also, just as the task force members have convened and shared their experiences, anything else that is surfacing at the top that we're interested in, the task force is interested in looking at more specifically?
Absolutely. So I'll say, my role as the reporter is to sort of try to put out spaces where people feel comfortable to talk and feel comfortable to be honest about their experiences, and not really to judge those experiences yet. And I don't mean judge in a negative way, but even to categorize them quite yet.
Right. Yes.
So I love the question, because eventually we're going to have to get to that, and I know in the back of my head we need to get to being able to describe what's happening.
Yeah.
But really, I've been thinking about it, like, how do I just document what I'm hearing and then later go try to group them, the experiences. But I mean, just to give you a sense of what we've been hearing, you know, there's definitely a difference between women in private practice versus working for the public sector. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one very concrete reason for that, for example, is if you have criminal clients and you're in private practice and you, let's say you have your own practice, you know, being able to go out on maternity leave is nearly impossible because you have no one to give your cases to, right?
Yeah.
Unless you've been able to develop a network of colleagues, and some people are able to do that, but it takes a tremendous amount of work to do that. And in some rural areas, that isn't an option.
Yeah.
So in private practice, the barriers are like absolutely tangible.
Yeah.
Whereas in the public sector, what I've been hearing is, you know, that women are able to take a very short maternity leave, not nearly enough, you know, or not nearly commensurate with our peer nations, but as we were talking about Canada and this Canadian study, but at least they're able to take leave and have some protection for their job to be able to come back,
mm-hmm.
And be able to pass their cases on to colleagues while they're out.
Right.
The
study that you mentioned, I think you and I were just talking about it. I'm not sure we talked about it on the podcast yet, but that's part of the initial stage that the task force is in right now, is gleaning all accessible, ready information on the subject, right? And, and trying to find what research is out there.
Mm-hmm.
And can you tell us a little bit more about what the success rate has been in that research? Absolutely.
I mean, I was bragging to my niece the other day, too, about how great, you know, how our legal system, legal reforms and policy systems are, you know, so evidence-based. And so I was bragging about that the other day. But I have to say that, you know, while that may be true relative to other countries generally, in this space, we have not been able to find a lot of research that's been done, particularly about, again, recruitment, retention and promotion of women in criminal justice practice. And so this task force is going to do incredibly important work. We hope that we will promote meaningful change in the profession, and at the very least start dialogues for longer term, you know, discussions about change,
right?
Systemic change.
That's right. It really looks like a foundation is needed.
Yes.
At this point in time.
Yes.
And so I'm sure many, many of us will look forward to the work that this Women in Criminal Justice Task Force will accomplish.
Mm-hmm.
So we talked about who you want to engage, and so just to clarify for any listeners, as we talk about these listening sessions, mm-hmm. we talk about reaching out to us, to the section,
mm-hmm.
For their input. They can reach the section at crimjust@americanbar.org. That's crimjust@americanbar.org. And just put in the subject line, Women in Criminal Justice, to help us recognize that you're trying to engage with the task force. And so what I'm hearing is you're open to all input at this stage, right? And as people think about these listening sessions, is there room for them at these listening sessions? Well, can you explain a little bit more?
Sure,
who you're looking forward to attend?
Well, I hope that I've conveyed the sense that we don't know actually what the outcomes are going to be. We're really wanting to listen, and so
mm-hmm.
that really hopefully invites people to feel like their voice is welcome and needed in this conversation and in this report. And so while we really want physical presence as much as people are able to join us, but also I would invite, I think that the website is a great way to find out about what we're doing,
mm-hmm.
and be in touch, but also I'd invite anyone to send me an email or give me a call if they want to talk about their particular situation. We do have a survey that we have drafted and we'll continue to fine tune that allows us to capture information both from our listening session participants, but also anyone else who has opinions that they want to share with us. We absolutely want to hear them. And I want to say also that, you know, we are also thinking about down the line who our allies are going to be. So for those who are listening who maybe, you know, are the partner of a woman who is practicing criminal law, or the brother or uncle, or you know, are maybe not directly involved in being able to speak to their experiences, but you want to get involved, you want to help, please, we need your voices as well, and we are keeping track of folks that have reached out to us who want to be supportive, mm-hmm. and definitely we will be in touch with those individuals as well. So, great. Again, personal outreach is great.
Well, thank you. As we, again, reflect on this current climate of Me Too world, post-Me Too movement, and all of the different industries that we've seen dealing with women's issues, I think we're seeing that women alone will not be able to enact the change that we're looking for. I think something that you've mentioned before is part of the solution will be dependent on these other groups, including men and people that identify as men. Mm-hmm. While these listening sessions, you're trying to create a safe space mm-hmm. for women and those who identify as women mm-hmm. and those that are non-binary but that identify with women's issues. Mm-hmm. We want them to participate in these discussions, of course, but are dependent on everybody engaging in this work is what I feel like I'm hearing.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think we know that, achieving justice for one group achieves justice for all groups. Yes. So when we talk about, women achieving, greater sort of foothold in criminal justice, we're talking mm-hmm. about African Americans, we're talking about, young women, we're talking about first generation, women, we're talking about undocumented lawyers. I'm going to just go there. I mean, we've got in our state and across the country, we know there are, a number of students who have come through law school and who are very much dedicated to the ideals of our nation and who want to be practicing lawyers. And in my view, it's all connected, mm-hmm. letting them have a space to practice law and be contributing members to the profession relate to women in criminal justice as well. So.
Yes. Well, I think I can speak for myself and any listeners of this podcast. We very much look forward to the work of the Women in Criminal Justice Task Force and all that you'll be looking to put forward in your findings and potential solutions and resources. So we'll look forward to that in the coming years, and we'll plan to touch base with the task force again, and maybe after all the listening sessions are completed. So again, just to remind any listeners that were interested in these listening sessions, can you tell us again where you plan to be this year that you already have planned?
Absolutely. So again, we're having in-person meetings in March, early March, in Albuquerque. We'll be in Nashville, piggybacking on the ABA conference there in early April. In June, mid-June, we're going to be piggybacking on the Access to Justice conference and meeting in Spokane. And then in August, we will be meeting at the ABA's annual conference in San Francisco. And let me just say a word about, we are planning to have listening sessions at those specific conferences. Well, most of them, we're piggybacking on specific conferences. But while we're in those places, we also want to get out and we can have listening sessions anywhere people feel like we could be, where our work would be helpful. So I encourage listeners, if you live anywhere in a 2-hour radius of any of those locations, please reach out to us and let us know. We'd love to have a listening session near you.
That's great. And I can also just share that there will be a special day of Women in Criminal Justice programming at the Nashville Spring Meeting for the Criminal Justice Section of the ABA. That will be the Thursday that kicks off that meeting, and that will be a full day of panel discussion, experts sharing, women in different roles of academia, the judiciary, defenders, sharing sort of their success stories. Success can be defined in many different ways, but just sharing their experiences and how they moved forward past obstacles that they encountered in the field. And so we're looking forward to that special day of programming. There will be more information that you can find on the Criminal Justice website as we get closer to that event. So for anyone interested, please reach out to the Criminal Justice section and let us know your interest. Again, that email address is crimjust at AmericanBar.org. So thank you again to Miriam for joining us today. We really appreciate all your insights, and thank you to our listeners for joining us today for this episode of The Just Pod.